You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of our best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So in today's episode, I'd like to talk about bad friendships, specifically the type of friendship where you feel like you've had this type of friend before, because obviously people can be shitty in different types of ways. But if you keep finding yourself feeling like you're in Groundhog Day, where you kind of feel like you've been here before, you've done this before, you've had this sort of friendship before. That's the kind of friendship I'm speaking about. And I definitely have had this experience where I've met people in literally different contexts. Some of them I met them in primary school. Some of them I met them in secondary school. Some of them I met them at university. Some of them I met at work or at events or at hobbies. And despite all these different settings and contexts, and also at different points of times in my life, I still have sometimes this feeling of deja vu where the person does something shitty, or they display a bad characteristic, or they treat me in a way that's bad. And honestly, at this stage, I don't even get mad at them anymore. I just think, huh, I've been through this before. I've had this type of friendship before. And I had thought that I had sort of gotten over that addiction to that kind of friend. But clearly the fact that I'm here having the same experience with a completely different person tells me that I haven't. And for a very long time, I think I did the classic thing that we all do where, you know, it's easy to blame the other person, because, you know, they are doing shitty things. You look at them and you're like, why do I keep attracting these people who are mean to me or unkind to me? I'm a nice person. I display X, Y, Z characteristics that are positive. I treat them well. I'm thoughtful. I'm sweet. I'm generous with my time and spirit and money and everything. And I keep getting bad friendships. So I went through the phase where I was looking externally, blaming the people. What is it about them that means that they just can't treat me well? Or why am I such a good person? Sounds really toxic to say out loud. But basically, why, despite me being such a good person, can I not have good friends? It's actually very silly to think about it. I like to say it out loud, but that's kind of the thoughts that go through your head. You always blame the other person. You always kind of silently or explicitly list your own great characteristics, and then you contrast them with all their deficiencies. And after having gone through this, as I said, multiple times, I asked myself the hard question, and I asked myself if I was the problem, because ultimately, if I'm meeting all these different peoples at different places, at different points, in different countries, different contexts, different settings, also they look different. Some of them are women, some of them are men, some of them are younger, some of them are older. If literally everything is different about each new friend that I make, the only common denominator in all those people and in all those situations is me. So I asked myself that question. Is it something that I am doing? Is it something that is core to my character that means that I consistently find myself in these types of relationships? And that's what I'm going to talk about in this episode. And for me personally, the bad friends, quote unquote, came in two different packages. If I had to characterize them, the core characteristics that they all shared, two groups. The first group was that they were drainers in some way or another. So an example of this is where I would feel like I would be so attentive to them. So I would lend an ear to any sob story for any extended amount of time. So I would listen to their woes for hours or weeks, or I would go through their difficulties, usually around relationships and things like that. And I would advise them for years. I'd listen to them for hours, but then I would feel as though they would have very little time for my problems. So I might have spent 4 hours listening to somebody tell me about the bad boyfriend that they've had for the past 4 years, where I've heard the same stories a million times and given the same advice, but I'm still trying to be patient and kind and sweet when I'm giving the same advice again. And then after 4 hours, I'd say, actually, something's going on in my relationship, or I might want to talk about something just completely different, maybe about an issue at work or some problem that I want and somebody to listen to. And then all of a sudden, I had this little experience where the person said, "Oh, I'm really tired. Would you mind if we speak tomorrow?" And, you know, they didn't call me the next day. Or, for example, when it came time to speaking about me, they would relate everything I said to themselves. Or I would feel like the generosity of spirit that I approached their issues with wasn't, you know, when somebody's just like passively listening, but you can sense that they're not actually invested. So anyway, the first category of friends where I just was where I felt drained by them. I would feel like I would be speaking life into them. I would be supportive and encouraging, but I would feel that they were either like explicitly a downer when it came to my life and my situations, or I just would feel like there was a lack of reciprocity in terms of energy and effort and just even basic listening skills. The second type of friends, and I would say like these are the more serious ones where it's probably this category that maybe sort of shift and think, actually, no, I need to start thinking about this in a way that I haven't thought about it before. So the second category of friends were friends where I would feel like they literally wanted to wear my skin, but they also like hated my guts. So I would sense that they like liked me in the sense that they were inviting me to things. They wanted to be around me all the time. They were making plans with me all the time. They were texting me, calling me, checking up on me, doing all the things that tell you that somebody is into you, that they like you as a friend, that they want to spend time with you as a friend. And then I would also notice as well, and I honestly didn't think of it as a bad thing, I would also notice that they would be super complimentary. I mean, obviously, it's never bad to be complimented. It feels good to be complimented. But they would be super complimentary. And then that complimentariness would also seep into like how they behaved. So I would notice, for example, that they would do a lot of mimicking or mirroring of the things I said or did. And like mimicking and mirroring is actually very normal in social relationships. Like if your friend has like an expression that they use all the time, like you'll find yourself like using that expression. Or let's say how couples over time start to look like each other. And it's not that they look like each other, it's that they start to dress very similar and have very similar expressions, because you like if somebody laughs in a particular way over time, like you can find yourself morphing into the way that they laugh as well. So naturally that can create the impression from the outside looking in that you look more similar, but it's more that you're doing similar things, you know. It's the same reason, by the way, why people say people often look like their dog. It's because the dog mirrors your expression or your energy in a way. So if you're somebody who like is always like barking, like pardon the pun, barking at your kids in the house, or aggressive, your dog will be that way. If you're very smiley and happy and like fun, your dog will be that way. You know, they mirror you in that respect. They respond to the stimuli that you're giving them. So same with people, it's completely natural and normal that over the course of a friendship that you're going to start to be similar in some way because you inspire each other. Let's say you really like your friend's fashion and they teach you about fashion. They're like, give you little recommendations like, oh, you should wear this with that. Or they impress you with their literature knowledge. Let's say they just happen to know like all books, then they can always recommend really good reads. Of course, over time, you're going to develop a similar palette in terms of the things you enjoy reading. Same with music. If they introduce you to new types of music, of course, then that music is going to find itself in your playlist. That's all those things are normal and expected. For me, though, the reason why I didn't like this is that the person wouldn't just mimic and mirror me in that normal way. They would mimic and mirror me and it would feel bad. Like they would simultaneously be mimicking me, but they would never acknowledge or even realize that they were copying me. It sounds really petty as an adult to say, but it's like sometimes like the reason why they say imitation is not necessarily like the highest form of flattery is because it depends in what way you're mimicked. Like let's say you're an online blogger and you blog about the recipes that you cook. If you go onto somebody's website and they've just taken all your recipes and put their name on it, even though they've copied you, it doesn't feel complimentary, because what they've done is they've done it in a malicious way. They've clearly just stolen from you and they've removed your stamp on it. They haven't given you any credit. So same with, like, you know how they say major fashion houses basically steal from small fashion businesses. So you'll see something on Chanel or Gucci or Prada, whatever, but they will have stolen that. Actually, no, I think it's more that these fast businesses, like these fast fashion businesses do it. So you'll see something on Fashion Nova, but they've stolen that from small businesses. Or you'll see something on Pretty Little Thing, but they've stolen that from small businesses. So again, those small businesses whose, like, fashion has been stolen from them, stolen in the sense that there's no credit or money that's been paid, they don't feel like it's a compliment, because it isn't a compliment. So same with me. It wasn't that they were mimicking me, because again, there are ways of mimicking that's just completely normal and expected. It's more that they would strip me entirely of the thing I had said or done, in a way where it was almost like a gaslighting experience, where you would kind of think, like, do they know they're doing that? Or did I not say that? An example is, let's make it petty. Let's say, like, the person never wears makeup. Like, I've had this experience where somebody's like, we've had this conversation where they say, I really like how you wear red lipstick. Or they say something like, you're so brave for wearing red lipstick, which I don't get, but they say that. And they never wear anything of color on their lips. And then we have that conversation a few weeks later, they're wearing red lipstick all the time now, but they never say, oh, hey, I finally decided to get over it and I'm going to wear red lipstick. It's like they just never speak about it. Or let's say you wear a specific brand of perfume. Like, I personally love, it's kind of like old lady-ish, but I love it because my mom used to wear it or still wears it. It's called Poème by Lancôme. So that's like my base perfume. You'd show up and they'll be wearing that perfume. Like, of all the hundreds of perfumes out there, they wear the one that they see you wear all the time. But they don't say, like, I love that perfume so much, I had to get it myself. Because you'd be like, okay, whatever. Like, you'd be like kind of flattered and be like, oh, okay, that's cute, I guess. But they don't do that. So it makes you feel as though they go away and they kind of like think about things. And then they do it in a sneaky way, or they do it in a way that doesn't feel good. Or an example is, so at university, this is for my post-grad, and for my undergrad, I was very, very active. But in this particular case, I made a conscious decision that I was going to form, like, good networks with people, because one of my university experiences was that although I was heavily involved in lots of hobbies, I really didn't, like, maintain my friendships that I made. I kind of let them go, and I didn't invest in them. And I said I wasn't going to do that. I was going to, like, cultivate relationships with people who would be, like, good for me in the future, like professional relationships, essentially. But we met in university, so basically networking. So I made a conscious effort to meet up with every person, or not every person, but the people I found interesting or who we had something in common, like professionally in my classes. And I would just go and have a coffee with them, or I'd have a drink with them, or we'd go out for lunch or dinner. And I did that with, like, probably like 8, 9, 10 people. And I remember mentioning that. And by the way, this girl that I'm referring to, like, she was stuck to me like glue. Like, she was with me all the time. She wanted to hang out all the time. So I mentioned to her, like, that's what I've been doing. And I can see a light bulb going off in her head. And she's like, oh, that's, I can tell she's thinking, like, oh, I should do that too. But she didn't say that out loud, which is fine. A week later, come to find out that she has organized a get together with most of the people that I had had one-to-ones with. And she didn't invite me. Like, she just had, like, a group meetup session, or she tried to organize a group meetup session where she invited, like, 10, 12 people, 8 or 9 of which are the ones that I had specifically said that I met up with and I'm cultivating a relationship with. And then she excluded me from that, despite the fact that we spend most university days together. And despite the fact that she was always, like, wanting to be around me. So I found that very, very curious. So anyway, that's the second category of fish, where the first one I talked about was drainers. The second one is where you sense that the person, like, doesn't like you despite performing like liking you. They want to hang out with you. They make plans with you. They want to be around you, but they do things that tell you, like, fundamentally, they don't like you for whatever reason, or they're in competition with you, or they're envious of you. Just something about the way they behave like contradicts the image you're trying to cultivate of being your friend. So this really got me thinking about people who are perpetual victims. And I would say in this like small example, I genuinely felt like I was a perpetual victim in that I spent all this effort in these friendships and then I would feel like they would snake me in some way or they would drain me in some way. So it's sort of like a victim mentality, a perpetual victim mentality. And what I've learned about that is I kind of feel like you probably get one or two passes without necessarily it being pathological. So what I mean by that is people will come into your life every now and again, a couple of times where, you know, you've done nothing wrong. It's not because of something you've done. Like your paths just happen to cross and that person wasn't a good friend for whatever reason. So in my case, I've told you in what ways they weren't good friends, but for you, it's probably something different. So everybody gets like a couple of passes and we give passes for exactly what I just said, because sometimes it's because of our inexperience. So because we haven't come across these types of people before, it takes us a couple of goes to work out that, oh, like this is what the natural conclusion is going to be of this type of person and this type of relationship. Like their behaviors are not going to improve. And these things that they're doing are an indicator of the kind of friend they're going to be. So once that's happened to you a couple of times, like your inexperience goes away and you now know the things to look out for in that type of friendship or a friendship that isn't good. Sometimes as well, we can give people passes or ourselves passes for finding ourselves with a bad friend, because sometimes we can be hopeful that it's a once-off, that they might have done something bad or behaved badly towards us for a period of time. But we hope that with our love and dedication to the relationship or to the friendship, that over time, they're going to start acting better or being a better friend. So again, that's partly like being hopeful, and that's also coming out of inexperience. So again, we can give ourselves a couple of passes for that. Also, we have to account for the fact that there are manipulators who are very good at what they do, in that they specifically smell the kind of person that they can exploit. And so because of that, you know, especially if we're inexperienced and we're like hopeful that it's a once off, of course we're going to fall prey to their manipulation, because again, we haven't come across it before and we're hoping for the best. So again, like we can give ourselves a couple of passes if we find ourselves in bad friendships because of these reasons. However, if this keeps happening, if you keep finding yourself in these types of friendships over and over again, and this is literally across like different contexts. So you meet them at different times, in different spaces, or different ages, or different types of people, but yet you still find yourself in the same type of relationship, the common denominator is you. Also, when you look around, if you notice that other people are managing to find good friendships, friendships where there's reciprocity, there's no maliciousness, enduring friendships, then again, it points to the fact that chances are you probably are doing something wrong. And I think the reason for being in these types of like bad friendships, or at least the reason I've come to the conclusion I've come to, is I genuinely feel like we are still getting something out of it. Because like sometimes when we tell stories or when we recount stories, when we think about situations in our head, we are literally always the victim or the hero, you know? So we always find a way to justify what has happened to us through the lens of, or through the exclusive lens, I should say, of what the other person has done that is negative or wrong or bad. But the thing is that it can't be the case that they are always wrong, like, or it can't be the case that they are the only one that is wrong. Like sometimes I would say, especially if this is like a consistent type of dynamic you keep finding yourself in, sometimes also like you are a bit villainous yourself. And the villainy is like really, really subtle. And I mean villainy like in a lighthearted sense. I don't mean like we're planning for anybody's downfall, but the villainy is like shows up like this. So the story you might tell yourself is, you know, I am always giving, but I'm never receiving. So I give my time, the effort that I put in, the energy that I give, the love and care and attention I give, maybe like the material goods. So financial resources I give, or the gifts that I give, or just like the emotional investment that I give. So I give all of that and I never get anything in return, or I don't get the same level of things in return. And what I think, like we are saying in another way, is that we feel that they are beneath us in some way. And again, this is very subtle, but it's in the inherent phrasing of things, or it's in the inherent relationship that words have with one another. So let's say, for example, you say that your friend or friends are thoughtless. What you are also saying simultaneously is that I am thoughtful. Or if you are saying that they are like very selfish people, very selfish friends, you are saying that I am selfless. Or if you are saying that they are flaky and unreliable, you're saying that I am reliable and dependable. Or if you are saying, like you're talking about like how they live their own lives, and you're like, they make very bad choices, what you're saying is that I make very good choices. Or like something that I hear very often, when we say like, they are very jealous, what you are saying is, I am very enviable, you know? So it's like, one can't exist without the other. They're literally like the like different sides of the same coin. So sometimes we're saying like narcissistic things or self-aggrandizing things, but we can't bear to say them in a bald-faced way. Like we can't like bear to say it in an explicit way, or sometimes we don't even recognize that that's what's happening. But in the same breath that we're like painting these people with all these like negative adjectives, like realize where the counter to that or the flip side of that is that we are inherently saying that we are better in every way. Like we are saying that we are the counter to their bad behavior or to their bad character or to their bad qualities. So you're kind of like fluffing yourself up in this at the same time that you are like chipping away at who they are. So, you know, it, most times it isn't as simple cut as one person is like the good person or the good friend and the other person is the bad person or the bad friend. Like usually the truth is a little bit more complicated. And I'm not even trying to gaslight you or gaslight myself. Like, of course it is true that people do bad things. Like it's very likely that they are all those negative characteristics, but the question is whether they are inherently like that. So would they be that way regardless of who they met? Like, are they just the type of person who displays these bad characteristics because that's just a core of who they are? Or is it something about how you two interact or something about the interactions that you share that leads them or brings out the bad friend in them, if that makes sense? In terms of like being inherently bad, like that one is pretty easy to understand. Like sometimes people for various reasons have come to be bad people or bad friends, or they are like not good in specific circumstances. So maybe they're like a good friend in other ways, but they're dishonest or they're competitive or they're emotionally immature or they're takers. So it's like some people or some contexts or environments bring that out of them. So they are truly behaving in that way. Other times though, I think that we can shape our friends to be bad, or we can bring out like that side of them, or we can tolerate that side of them until it becomes like an entrenched part of the way in which they relate to us. And the reason why I say that is that it's almost like the negative behavior like validates a need or a desire that we have. And we can understand this in other like contexts or in other examples. So you might have had the experience of coming across like parents who have children, like adult children, and those adult children are so dependent on them. Like it's almost as though they've been parentified to such a toxic level that the adult children don't go through the normal like developmental milestones that you would expect them. So maybe you have a situation where like a 30-year-old adult child is being financially supported by their parent, or they live at home, but not because they're saving towards like a mortgage or saving towards independence, but because they don't work or because they can't be bothered. And the parent might even be like telling them all the time, like, you need to stop being a bum, you need to get a job, you need to do X, Y, and Z. But sometimes you can reverse the view and look at it from the point of view of the parent being the problem and see that sometimes it's because the parent doesn't want the child to leave. Like, on the one hand, they're reprimanding the child, and I say child like loosely, because I'm talking about adult people, like adult children, like people who are like 25 plus. So in the on one side, the parent is like reprimanding that their adult child for being a bum, for not having a job, for not being independent, for not being X, Y, and Z, or not doing the things that they should be doing, that both people know that the adult child should be doing. But then they're creating the circumstances, or they have cultivated that child in such a way where that was always going to be the natural conclusion. So parents who don't encourage or require their children to do things independently, don't require them to get jobs, who teach them and train them to be dependent. So like in their younger years, they don't teach them to clean their own room. They don't teach them to cook. They don't teach them that they need to get a job. They don't teach them to contribute to the family household. Then of course, what's going to happen as time goes by is that they're going to be exactly this kind of adult. And also on top of that, whilst the parent is frustrated that their adult child isn't doing the things that they should be doing, they also have a perverse need to like still be needed by that child, or still have that child around. And so they create the circumstances under which that child will always be dependent on them and will always be around. That's an example of like cultivating in somebody something that you despise, but also simultaneously need. Another example in the parental context, or a parental example, is when parents who've gone through a separation, or whose partners or spouses or you know, other half have left for whatever reason, or is no longer in the picture, like for whatever reason, they can sort of want a proxy or pseudo spouse. And this usually happens with like the oldest boy or the only boy. So they kind of want that boy child to take the place of their partner. And I don't mean that's in the perverted way. I just mean in the sense that they want them around. They want to have a companion forever. They want them to not leave them as well. And so they almost like mirror how they would have treated their partners. So one thing I always notice is like with the oldest child, or like with the oldest boy or only boy, they'll get like the best treatment. Like whilst the girls in the family, like the girl children in the family, will be expected to wash dishes, to clean up their rooms, to clean up the house, to have responsibilities, to expect it to care for others and expect it to self-sacrifice, the boy children, especially when it's only one or it's the oldest boy, will get like the king treatment. Like he won't be expected to cook or clean or contribute to the household. And he will have the mother doing everything for him. And he will also usually have like the sisters, because the mother tells him to do things for him, to a point where, again, it stunts his natural development because he doesn't get to practice doing those things for himself. And so whilst the parent is like telling that adult boy off for not being at the stage that he really should be at that age, she's also kind of created that monster herself. Like she has cultivated that characteristic in that child because on some level she doesn't want him to leave, because she wants like a pseudo relationship with him, or she wants him to fulfill some of the companionship that she would have had from the partner that left. Or in a relationship context, like let's say you've had the experience of being with somebody and that person wasn't a good partner to you for various reasons. So maybe they were like a really tight or cheap person, or you found it difficult, like they didn't commit to you, or they weren't like faithful to you. And the weird thing is that you still stay for a very long time, because even though they're not giving you the things that you say you want, they are giving you something else that you need. Maybe that need is to be wanted. So with like low effort men or lazy men, often they're that way because their partners like don't require anything of them. And sometimes their partners don't require anything of them because they've got a need to sort of be needed by that partner, or to have dependency between them and their partner. So it's almost like if they do everything for their partner, even though it cultivates like this monster that is like lazy and like useless and like is kind of bummy, What the perverse thing they get out of that is they've got a partner who is dependent on them, who needs them, and who is unlikely to leave. And the key thing here is that, again, it's like we are literally cultivating those people. It's through the things that we're doing, through our interactions, through what we're normalizing, through basically like the reward mechanism that they end up behaving in this way. And it's exactly the same thing with friendships. Like sometimes, like I said, people are independently, inherently bad friends, not because of anything that we have done. But sometimes it's also because we're providing that particular stimuli that results in them behaving badly, you know? And going back to the examples I've just given, like the most infuriating thing is you'll be with somebody and they will have treated you like trash or treated you in a way that was below the standard that you would have wanted. But then they'll get with somebody else and they'll be like the perfect partner. Or like your child will be a useless bum until they're like 30, 35. But then if you cut them off for whatever reason, let's say you've reached your breaking point and you're like, I'm not having any of this. All of a sudden, they'll like click into gear. Like they'll find their own place. They'll have a job. They'll have a steady relationship. They'll just be at the level or stage that they should have been. Or with friends who you see treat other friends well, but they treat you poorly. Again, all those things point to the fact that there's something about what you are also doing in the relationship or the dynamic that contributes to them behaving the way that they are. Now, in the context of friendships, it's exactly the same thing in that sometimes we sacrifice like having a good friendship so that we can have a deeper need or desire fulfilled. And sometimes, by the way, that deeper need or desire isn't necessarily good. Like it can just be destructive. So I'm sure you've heard this, but I've heard many women say that they believe that female friendships are untrustworthy, or that they believe that women are competitive, especially around men when they're seeking the validation of men. But sometimes maybe what the truth is that maybe the woman in particular like chooses bad female friendships in an attempt to validate their need for male validation. And what I mean by that is it's kind of like attractive in a perverse way to cultivate the kind of environment in which women are jealous of you because men like you more. Because another way of saying it is that men fancy me more than all the other women I know, and that's why they can't stand me. So usually you keep them close because in a perverse kind of way, it's validating that feeling of being better than them, being more attractive, being more desirable, being more wanted by men. So it's kind of like you keep these people as proxy reminders about how desirable you are, as proxy ways of getting the validation you need that you are like wanted by men or that you are attractive. Or another thing is, let's say you believe that you've got friends, or you cultivate or you find yourself in friendships where the friends are takers. Maybe it isn't just or only that the friends are takers. Maybe it's also that you have like a complex to feel needed, because ultimately what's that saying is you are willing to give to the point where it hurts, because that hurt is still a reminder that that person needs you, so that you're still getting a high from being needed by that person. Or maybe it's something even like more villainous than that. Maybe it's that you have a feeling, or you've got a need to feel superior in the sense that you are a better person. Because when you're saying that all these friends are takers, you're also simultaneously saying, like I said earlier in the podcast, that you're kind of saying that you're kind, you're giving, you're generous, you know, insert whatever positive adjective that is the opposite of being a taker. You're saying you're all these wonderful like qualities, and they're essentially like pariahs. So maybe you keep people around who are takers in some way or drainers in some way, because in a weird perverted kind of way, it kind of reminds you that you're a superior person, or makes you feel like you're a superior person. Or let's say you believe that your friends are like intellectually like unstimulating, you know, you find them dumb essentially. Well, the thing is that like most of us are average across the board. like numerically, like where take us all up, line us up in a row from smartest to dumbest or the other way around. Most people are in the middle. And so if you keep finding yourself with people who are below average, like in the brightness, in the smartness category, maybe it's because you're cultivating a dynamic in which you get to feel intellectually superior by surrounding yourself with like dumb people. You know what I mean? Or maybe it's that you surround yourself with people who aren't that bright or informed or aware, whatever the thing is, so that they can be impressed by your intelligence. You know, it's like a perverted way of trying to get that validation from them, but you're doing it by intentionally selecting people who validate that feeling that you need. Or the final example I give, maybe you surround yourself with like losers in other ways, like people who are unmotivated or directionless. And you do that so that you can feel, one, comparatively more accomplished. Maybe that's what your kink is. Like you want to feel like you in contrast to them are going somewhere, you're doing something with your life. Or maybe again, it's so that you can feel needed. So if they are helpless, if they are directionless, unmotivated, you kind of get to sweep in and be the hero and get to be the person who saves them over and over again. And you get to be the person who guides them. You get to be the person who's needed by them. And also maybe, again, like not making it seem as though all these things are selfless or like innocent. Maybe it's also so that you get to tell them what to do. Maybe it's a way of exercising your controlling behavior, but in a way where it feels contextually appropriate because they're not doing the right thing. So these are all examples of like that. These are all examples of how you choose people to validate the things that you want. And the key thing here is that the things that you want show up in what you do ultimately, like, or who you truly are shows up physically in your life. You know what I mean? Like I had this experience a few months back where I was looking around my home and I was like, why is everything so messy? I was speaking to my partner. We're like, why are there random like Amazon boxes from 4 weeks ago just sitting in the hallway? Like, why are there like 25 pairs of shoes at the entrance? You know, why is there like a cat bowl in the sitting room under the chair that's been there for like 4 days? Or why is the bed never like, well, you know what I mean? So sometimes in your head, do you think you're an organized person? You're a clean person, you know, you've got your stuff together, but the world, the environment around you will physically remind you that that's not true, because you'll look around your mess and you'll be like, oh, clearly I am a messy person, because that is literally the truth, because I can see that in my environment, in physically represented around me. Same with what we say to ourselves about the kinds of friendships that we want. We can say all these things like, I want a kind friend, I want a thoughtful friend, I want a generous friend, I want like a, you know, a compassionate friend, I want insert whatever positive adjective. But if you keep having like crappy friends around you, that's a physical reminder, but that's actually what you want. That's actually the type of friend that you are seeking out, because most of the time we do the things that we want to do, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, you ever find yourself knowing that you want to do something, like, let's say, knowing that you have to do something, rather, let's say you've got an essay due, or let's say you owe somebody a piece of work, or let's say you owe a response, like a text message response to somebody, and you just find yourself delaying. It's because you don't want to do it. You know, you literally find ways of manifesting what you want in the environment around you, because you better believe when it comes time to like doing the things you actually want to do, that you don't have to force yourself to do, you do them like without being told, like, I'm doing this episode, this podcast, and nobody's like making me do it. There's no deadline, no external deadline where somebody's making, you know what I mean? You just do the things you want to do. I think that's also true of the people around you. Maybe want is not the right word. Maybe it's need. It's like the actual needs that you have, not the things that you say on the surface or the things that you might be consciously aware of, but the things that you truly, truly need, they show up in your friendships as well. Now, another explanation for like the reason why you have bad friends outside what I said, outside like just like the, you know, if you meet people who are just bad, like a few times and you learn from that, or outside what I've just spoken about cultivating friends that scratch an itch that you can't find yourself admitting to because it doesn't feel good or it doesn't sound nice. So like outside of those two reasons, sometimes like you find yourself in bad friendships because like you yourself are a bad friend. And the reason is very simple. Like they say, birds of a feather flock together. And it's also true here because like we kind of shape our environment, or we shape the environment around us. Obviously, I know it's also true the other way, like our environment shapes us, but it's also just as true that we shape our environment. And what I mean by that is usually we cultivate the kinds of friendships around us that mirror our values. So I'll give you an extreme example. Like, let's say if you are not a criminal, or you don't have values, like criminal values, then you're going to be repulsed by people who do those things. You know, you're not going to stick around when you see that people are thieves, or they con people, or they are like, they sell drugs, whatever the criminal behavior you find repulsive, like you won't stand for people who display those characteristics, you know? So again, it's mirroring the fact that you've got values of like not wanting to be a criminal, and not respecting criminals, not respecting criminal behavior. Like that's just reflected in the people who are around you. Same thing with like with rapiness, or people who are rapey. Like if you find that disgusting, you will be naturally repulsed by people who display those characteristics. So when you hear men excuse rapey behavior, or act and or see them act and behave in predatory ways, or if you see them like being disrespectful to women at large, you will find that distasteful and disgusting, and you will naturally drift away from those people because again, it doesn't reflect your values. Or if you are a generous person, if you're a generous person and it's just a natural part of who you are, like you will find cheapness or tightness in people repulsive. Like let's say you're at dinner. Let's say you meet like a new friend and you notice at dinner they want to like, because typically like you just split the bill. Like either one person gets it or you just split the bill. But if you see that they're focused on the scents and they're like, you had a Diet Coke and, you know, I had a Diet Coke and only, and you had wine, so I want to pay a little bit less. Or if you see that they're just not a generous person in other ways, like they don't treat their family to things, or they... these things are just self-evident, like people pick up on like cheapness. If you see that in people, you will be repulsed by that. And over time, you will drift away from that person because you don't find that quality attractive, or that quality for you is like a deal breaker. Same thing with if you're a reliable person, or you're a steady person or a stable person, you will naturally be repulsed by flakiness, and you won't be around people who are that way. So then bringing that together, what that means is that if you have friends who are like that, it kind of implies that you also have some of those values, or you also have some of those characteristics, because if you didn't, it would be self-evident in the people around you. You know what I mean? In the same way that you can probably confidently say that you don't have killers around you that you know of, or you don't have rapists around you that you know of, or you don't have like perverts around, you know what I mean? Like some things you can definitively say, I don't have that and I would never stand for that. It's also true that if you have people around you, if all your friends are flaky, it probably is because you're flaky in some way too. Or if you have friends that are tight-fisted or stingy, it probably is because you are that way too. Because again, like if you weren't that way, you would be repulsed by their behavior. You would naturally drift away from that behavior because to you, it just isn't something that feels good. It doesn't feel good, and so you don't stick around for it. And if you do stick around for it, it means that at the very least, at the very minimum, you tolerate it. But also sometimes it's because they're kind of mirroring who you are. Like that's what they always say about the people in our lives. The people in our lives mirror our values and mirror us in some way. And so like sometimes, like although it doesn't feel like it, they're kind of like a good check-in with yourself, in that they're kind of showing you what's actually going on in your internal world, in your emotional state, in like psychologically, in a way that sometimes we can't like recognize in ourselves, but we can see those things being reflected in our environment through the people who we accept in our life, or the people who, you know, we cultivate in our life. And then, you know, kind of shows us who we are essentially. Now, the final reason I'll touch on like the reason for bad friendships is sometimes it's also like comes about as a consequence of not like cultivating our friendships properly. And what I mean by that is, like, for many people, their friendships can actually be the most enduring relationships they can have or that they will ever have, especially in the context of, like, especially in the West, like, divorce rates are literally around the 50% mark. Also, in terms of like the people who love us the most being our parents or carers, like, we know that they're not always going to be around. And so for many of us, our friends are the one pillars that might be with us for a lifetime, or that will be with us long after those other people I've spoken about are no longer in our lives. And so it really is worthwhile investing in them. And sometimes, like, people take like their friendships for granted in like really bad ways. Like, we forget that friendships are actually a lot like non-platonic relationships, in that they take the same, or they require the same inputs in many respects. Like, they, for example, need the same attention. Like, you need to be invested in each other's lives for the relationship to be mutually emotionally satisfying. You want to feel like your friend knows you. You want to get to know your friend. You want to have some kind of like feeling like you hold their attention and they hold yours, which is the same as like in a relationship. Another similarity between our platonic friendships and our romantic relationships is that they also require our active presence. And by that, I mean, like, we need to spend quality time in seeing each other and spending time with one another and being around each other, like physically being together and hanging out, because there's a bond that forms when you're in the same space at the same time, sharing, laughing, connecting. You know what I mean? A bond develops where when you don't do that often or you don't do that enough, like, naturally there is going to be some distance and it is going to be less satisfying, because the friendship will degrade as time goes by from the lack of like presence, the lack of like being there in somebody's life, the lack of quality time. Another similarity is that, like, just being interested, like being interested and bringing your best foot forward. So in the same way where many relationships like suffer because as time goes by, we start to take our romantic partners for granted and we stop showing up as like the best version of ourselves. So we stop being as interested in them, asking them questions, being curious about their lives, being curious about what they're going through. Like, we stop being interested in really getting to know the person and really trying to see them for who they are. And that can have that does have a negative knock-on effect in the relationship, because one of the reasons why we feel so enamored by somebody when we first meet them, it's that feeling of somebody being like really interested in you, like really invested in you, wanting to know you, wanting to know every little thing about you, like your favorite color, like what you like to eat, what you like to listen to, like the values that you hold, your political, you know, you're interested in them partly because they're also interested in you. So it's the same thing with friendships. It's also the case when it comes to like keeping the spark in your friendships, in that like you should be having fun times with your friends. You should be having like giddy times where you're laughing and joking and experiencing new things and having adventures and having new fun positive experiences. Like, all those things like keep the spark in your friendships going. Like, it really shouldn't be all dreary or all doom and gloom or all negative or all just like downbeat experiences, because again, within the context of relationships, you also would find that incredibly draining. And it's the same thing with friendships as well. Like, you need to have that joy. Like, I kind of feel like it should be like 60% joy, 40% of like a life happens. So you have to talk about things and not everything's going to be roses. But like, that fun and that spark should still be there. There should also be like emotional honesty and emotional vulnerability in that, like your relationships, like your romantic relationships, you also have to train your friends in what you need from them emotionally, because they're not always going to know. Like, we come from different backgrounds, we had different familial experiences, we learned how to love differently, we learned how to connect with people differently. And so it's only natural that even if you have all these great things in common with your friends, you might not have the same ways of expressing love to one another, or you might not have the same ways of expressing what you need from those relationships. So like romantic relationships, you have to be invested in getting to know what their love language is, and also being willing to make yourself vulnerable in order for the person to get to know you and what you need so that they can give that to you. And then the final thing I'll say, you know, like romantic relationships, like, some friendships also should end, you know, like, you should break up with bad friends, because I mean, one, their bad behavior and their presence in your life, when they display bad behavior, kind of repulses, like I said, the other people where they find that unacceptable. So let's say you're at a party, you have a birthday party in which you have one of your bad friends present, and then you have a new good friend who you're trying to cultivate a friendship with. When they see you're a bad friend, they'll get the impression that that's who you are. Or worse, that bad friend will normalize bad behavior for your new good friend. You know what I mean? Having a knock-on effect in that that new friend might think it's acceptable to display some of the bad characteristics that your bad friend has. So it's important to remove them from your life, not only because they can act as a contagion, but also because they essentially like crowd out like the other good friends that would have been in your life, you know? And again, like relationships, like, not everything is like a deal breaker when it comes to friendships. Like, some things honestly can be worked on. Like, some things are a dead no. Like, for me, criminality is a dead no. I don't want people who are criminal in my life. I don't want that. I don't want to put my friends or family at risk. I don't want bad things to happen to me. I don't ever want to see the inside of a jail. So I'm not going to surround myself with people who are in any way like that. Like, look at the people, for example, who are going to go down with Diddy. They kind of have it coming. They kind of deserve it, in my view, because they're willing to put up with his bad ways, his abuse of women, his exploitation of women, his depraved behavior. And so, you know, if you're around for the good times, you'll also be going down with the person through the bad times. So again, like, there are some things where if they really are against your values or your moral compass, like, you just shouldn't have them around. But there's also much more like subtle or less obvious things, or things where it takes a long time for you to realize what's going on. One of those things is like people who are pathologically dishonest. And this could be in like little ways, but as time goes by, you'll notice that those little ways like add up. And also that you are not going to be protected from their lies. Like, sometimes people who are like liars or who are manipulators in other ways, like, make you feel special, like you're the special friend. You can see them being dishonest to their other friends, even to their family members or just to people they come across in life. But they make you feel as though you're in on it together in a way, like they would never do that to you. And that is that's categorically untrue. Like, it's only a matter of time until you become a victim of their lies as well. Like, I had this friend when I was 20, from like 20 to like 23 or 24. And this is when I thought I was going to be an actor. And to be honest, I didn't actually want to be an actor. I just kind of went along with it because that's a thing that we had shared when we first met. So anyway, whenever we would meet people, because she basically was chronically unemployed, like, she would never hold down a job. Like, she just didn't like to work. So she would meet people who, and she was at the age where it wasn't cute. Like, she was like 5 or 6 years older than me. So at this stage, she was like 29, 30. And when we would meet people, now what I know in retrospect is that she must have felt ashamed or embarrassed. But we would meet people that she knew from school or from university or from just like her life. And she would just lie. Like, they would say, "Oh, hey, what are you up to?" Like, you know how people speak when they catch up, like, oh, hey, what have you been up to? It's been a long time. How's, like, what do you do for work? And she would come out with, like, the most outlandish, exaggerated lies. Like, she would be like, well, yeah, I just started my own production company. Like, she did not. She had not. Or she'd be like, oh, I'm about to star in this show. You know, it's, like, low-key, but I'm getting paid a lot of money. Or she would say, I'm in the process of directing my first film. She would just say, like, things that were just, they sounded good, but they were just, like, utter and complete lies. During this period, I also, like, she had told me that I should move in because I was going through a breakup, and she was like, you know what, come and live with me, you know, it'll be fun, we'll have a great time. And we would see each other all the time. So at this point, I was like, this is fantastic. And when she first suggested it, she basically said, like, why don't you just move in with me while you get on your feet, and then maybe we can find, like, a place together later on. So I was like, oh, bet, like, this is really nice of you. So the first day I go to her family home, her dad sits me down and he tells me, like, this is what the rent is going to be. And obviously I was taken aback, because when we had been speaking, she had been saying I would get to stay there for free, basically. So again, like, this was a complete shock, but I just chalked it down to, like, obviously her parents are strict, and it's her parents' home, so, you know, it's fine. And I was working anyway, so it wasn't a big deal. Less of a sweet deal than I thought it was, but ultimately she can't control what her parents want. And on top of that, we still get to live together and, like, do fun things together, so it wasn't a big issue. As time goes by, like, I start to notice that the environment in the home, like, starts to get cold. So she had two sisters and a brother. One of the sisters lived at home and the brother lived at home, and the other sister would visit from time to time. And in the first, like, few months that I lived there, like, they were so friendly and warm towards me. Like, we would have dinner together, we would joke about together, I would help them, like, with stuff. Completely happy, positive, pleasant relationship. And of course, I was nothing but respectful towards her parents. But as time went by, like, I started to notice that things were getting colder and colder. You know, like, the sister was giving me dirty looks. Like, the brother, like, was kind of like, he wasn't saying or doing anything mean, but I just sensed that he didn't want to hang out with me anymore. Same with the mother. I started to feel, like, her eyes on me, like she was angry with me. And then this all comes to a head one day, because after Sunday, her mom sits me and this friend down, and she's like, we need to talk about the rent. And then I was like, oh, what do you mean by that? And she says, well, you haven't been paying rent for the past few months. And of course, this was complete and utter, like, news to me. Like, I was so surprised and shocked. And so while this conversation is taking place, my friend, like, starts to kick up a storm. And she's like, Mom, it's nothing to do with the rent. It's nothing to do with money. You're just trying to control me and my behavior. Like, you don't like that I go out, that we go out. And you're basically trying to find reasons to nitpick on her. And she basically was doing that thing where people try to derail the conversation in such an extreme way to prevent, like, a specific issue being spoken about. It's kind of like if you, like, catch a partner, like, texting people they shouldn't be texting, and then they make the focus of the conversation their outrage of the fact that you went through their phone. So it was kind of like that. Like, she was kicking up a real storm. It was actually very dramatic. So she was, like, shouting and like, about to slam the door, and, like, really actually kind of disrespectful even speaking to her parents that way. But on top of that, it was just so bizarre. It was really bizarre. So in the midst of all that, I'm getting confused, and she's basically about to say, let's go, let's get out of here, like, we don't have to take this. But then I'm like, no, hang on a second, like, your mom just said something really weird, let me just hear what she has to say. So I'm like, just give me a second, let me hear what she has to say. So then her mom proceeds to tell me, and her sister, by the way, is sitting at the table, like, nodding along, the brother's in the background, like, looking awkward. So the mom says, I haven't been paying rent for the past few months, and what's going on? And then I say to her, of course I have been paying my rent. I pay my rent every first of the month without fail, you know, because I hate the idea of people thinking I owe them money. It's kind of like a pet peeve of mine. And on top of that, like, why wouldn't I pay rent? Like, I live there. They've made it clear from the very beginning I'm paying X amount of rent, so it's completely fine. So what emerges is that this friend, so I would pay the rent to this friend. I would literally transfer the money, and thank God it was a bank transfer as opposed to, like, cash, because I wouldn't have been able to prove this if it had been cash. But I would like clockwork, transfer the money into this friend's bank account on the first of the month. So I took out my phone and I showed them my bank statements. I type in the friend's name in my bank statements, and it shows that every first of the month, I give her rent. And what had happened, or what had been happening for several months, was that the friend would keep the money I gave her. Again, remember that she never worked. And I kind of wondered how she could afford things, but she never worked. And what she was doing was that she was using the money I was paying her parents for rent through her, and she would use that money. All this to say is that I had assumed that her dishonesty only applied to other people, but not to me, that I was sacred, that I was special, that I was her best friend. And so, of course, whilst I may see her lying to friends that she hasn't seen in a long time, or lying to former colleagues, in my head, I could justify it because I could say, well, I understand why, because she's embarrassed, or she's just trying to like make it seem like she's doing more than she is, because she doesn't want to lose face. But no, like what I learned is that what you tolerate, like the bad qualities you tolerate in friends, will eventually come to like bite you in the butt. So like, it really is worth cutting or ending these types of friendships. Another example is like jealousy. Like jealousy is one of those things that really should be a non-negotiable for many reasons. One of those reasons is that it's one of the emotions that is very destructive, in the sense that it, like, some feelings trigger in others like less dangerous feelings. Like somebody who feels like sad because you don't text them is less dangerous than somebody who feels belittled by you, or who feels like resentful of you, or who feels like contempt for you. And with jealousy, it comes with like very potent emotions. It comes with contempt, and it comes with a destructive energy, in that the person fundamentally doesn't believe that you deserve the things that you have, and they feel that they deserve those things more than you. And on top of that, it's an emotion that is shamed societally, so people have a need to hide it, so they don't want to show that they're jealous. They'll go through all these lengths to kind of hide it from you, and even sometimes like from themselves. And so the reason why it's dangerous is because of that reason. It comes with potent negative emotions, but also it's very covert, it's very sneaky, it's very difficult to discern, and it can drive people to do the most like dangerous of things. So for me, like, that's non-negotiable. The other thing is like a lack of transparency, I would say, because with most relationships, platonic or romantic, there are some core things that you need to have. Like the one thing I said is already like a basic level of honesty. Another is like mutual respect. Another though is transparency. Like you should be confident that the person that you are in a friendship with, that you know who they are, that you trust who they are, that they're open with you, that they don't hide things from you unnecessarily, or in a way that you don't know why, or you can't explain why. I had this friend a long time ago, a few years ago at this stage, and if my friends and family listen to this, like, they'll know exactly who I'm talking about. But I was friends with him for a very, very long time. I was friends with him for like maybe 7 or 8 years. And at the time when our friendship ended, I was like maybe 27. So it kind of feels like a long part of my life. And anyway, after a number of years of being friends with him, I just realized that I didn't know anything about this person. And this is not because I wasn't invested in him, or wasn't curious about him, or I wasn't myself open with him. No, like I realized I didn't know literally anything. I didn't know where he worked or if he worked. I didn't know where he lived. I didn't know like if he was gay or straight, because I never had met anybody that he'd been with, and he never told me about anybody he's speaking to. I didn't know any of his other friends. I didn't know any of his family members. He didn't talk about his family. He didn't talk about whether he had siblings or he was going home for Christmas. It just felt like he was like an island, like an independent island with no connections. And then meanwhile, like, he had like met my partner, been together for a while. He'd been to my personal home in London, but he'd also been to my home in Ireland, to my family's home, where he'd met my mother, he'd met my siblings, he met my friends. We had hosted him because he was in town for a debating competition that we were both at. I had invited him into my life with really open arms. And then when I realized I didn't know anything about him, I realized this is creepy. This is strange. This is outside of the ordinary. And it fundamentally felt as though he had gone out of his way not to disclose information about himself to me, despite the fact that I had made myself so open to him. And so when there's a lack of transparency and lack of like reciprocity, I genuinely feel like it's an indication that something more sinister lurks like behind. Or I don't know, for me, I always feel like unknown quantities are dangerous quantities for me. Like I can only assume that he didn't tell me about his life because there were bad things to know. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when you see those scary stories and they're like, this person ends up being like a sex offender. And what people around him say is that he was a loner. We didn't know anything about him. Like, he just kept to himself. He was like an unknown quantity. For me, like, that's where my head goes. I just think there's something sinister or something off or something to be wary of, because that's outside the norm of expected social behavior. Usually when somebody is transparent with you and they're open with you and they're welcoming with you, like most people have a natural desire or impulse to reciprocate. And when that reciprocation isn't there, usually it's like an indicator that something else, like read bad, is going on. Now, the final thing I will talk about is that with all these friendships around us, like the quickest way to change the people around you is by changing yourself. So there's no point being so externally focused, because like I said, the people around you are a reflection of what's going on in your internal world, what's going on with you emotionally and psychologically. And so if you keep finding yourself in situations with bad friends or friends who are inadequate in some way, the quickest way or the easiest way to ensure sustained change is by working on yourself, by getting your self-esteem up, by improving your self-care, by investing in getting to know your own mind and why you do things and what drives you into forming these relationships. And then when you have worked that out, when you work out what is it about you that you keep finding yourself in these sort of dynamics, when you figure that out, like that will stop happening. Or at the very least, you will have fewer of those people around you, and it'll take you a much shorter amount of time to recognize what's happening. You know, so you might still have those people creep into your life because it takes a while to implement new changes and to be a different person or to make different choices. And we improve in an iterative way, in the sense that you make a little change and a little change and a little change, and then they accumulate into being like a big change. So because it's an iterative process, it isn't going to be like you change yourself today and then everything changes consequently tomorrow. It takes time. But when you work on yourself, you are able to recognize those behaviors much quickly, and you're able to understand like why it's happening to you. And that's actually a very freeing feeling. Like I used to feel like a sort of like a perpetual victim in that I would feel like, why is this happening to me? Why do I keep making these bad friends? Like, what is it about me and my weak personality or weak boundaries or weak whatever that means these people keep being like in my company or I keep attracting them? It's a much more empowering state to realize like I'm actually cultivating this environment around me. Like I am that powerful in that I can manifest the things that I want. I just have to work on manifesting positive things coming from a positive place, as opposed to trying to have my needs met in a destructive way. And so with that, I'm going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you liked the episode. If you did like the episode, I'd really appreciate it if you left me a 5-star review on wherever you listen to your podcast. I will be back next Monday. In the meantime, have a great week, and I'll speak to you then.